Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the Q&A portion of the call, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Your host of today's call is Dr. Jack Stein. Thank you. You may begin.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Jack Stein. I'm the director for the Office of Science Policy and Communications at the National Institute on Drug Abuse, a part of the National Institutes of Health. We'd like to welcome you to a teleconference press briefing on the Monitoring the Future study. This is the 40th anniversary of this study that is supported by NIDA and conducted by the University of Michigan. We're delighted to host this today, and let me just quickly mention how we'll proceed, and then we'll move right into our briefing. Following my brief comments right now, we'll have brief presentations by several of the principals involved or connected with this study. First will be Dr. Nora Volkoff, who is the director for the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Following that, we will have a representative, Ms. Mary Lou Leary, the Deputy Director for State, Local, and Tribal Affairs at the Office of National Drug Control Policy, speaking on behalf of the agency for the Acting Director, Michael Botticelli. She will also be joined later by Regina LaBelle, the Chief of Staff, who will be available for some questions as well. Following their comments will be Dr. Loy Johnston and Richard Miek from the University of Michigan, who have been the individuals responsible for conducting the Monitoring the Future study. So with that, I'd like to turn things over to the Director of National Institute on Drug Abuse, Dr. Nora Volkoff, who will have some brief comments about the study.
Well, Jack, thanks very much. Good morning, everybody that's on the phone. For us, it's an annual event, and this particular year where we are reporting the results for 2014 actually looks very good vis-a-vis the trends and indicators on the consumption of drugs by teenagers in that are in high school. What we showed is significant decreases in the rate of drug use, both for illicit substances and legal ones. For most of the illicit substances, there are actually trends towards a continued decrease that becomes significant if one looks over it over the past 5 years. Some of these decreases are more pronounced for some of the drugs than others. Among the most notable ones are the significant decreases that we are observing in the abuse of opioid analgesics. These are prescription medications used for the treatment of pain, which have generated a lot of concern because they can be highly addictive and because of the risk of overdoses. The rate of these drugs has been quite high among teenagers, we're seeing actually over the past 5 years significant, pretty dramatic, I would almost say, reductions in the two most frequently abused drugs. One of them is Vicodin, which actually for many years and up to 2009 remained at 9.7% use in the past year. For this year, it has gone down to 4.8%. Similarly, OxyContin, which is the other second favorite pain medication, which had been remain at levels around 4.5% up to 5%, has now been reduced to 3.3%. And so these are very good indicators of how prevention campaigns that have been targeted towards prescription have worked. There's also significant reductions in the rate of the abuse of synthetic cannabinoids, which are referred to as SPICE. These we started to record 3 years ago when the numbers were around 11% past year use on 12 raters. They are currently at 5.8%. And so we can see that in a three-year period, there has been almost a 30% reduction in the use of these drugs that actually can be quite toxic. Another very notable decrease is in the rate of cigarette smoking, particularly daily smoking, which is actually the ones associated with the worst outcomes. Between last year and this year, in 12 graders, we've seen a reduction from 8.5% to 7.7%. And this just basically is a continued trend of decrease that we have seen over the past 10 years, most accentuated over the past 5 years. And finally, alcohol. There, the decreases are not so dramatic, but are actually quite significant across all of the indicators when you look over the past 5 years. Having said that, despite all of these very good news in many of the drugs, we have not been able to see decreases in the abuse of marijuana, which continue to remain at very high levels across the 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. For example, past year use of marijuana among 12th graders was 35%, and daily use or regular use of marijuana among 12th graders was 5.8%. This constitutes some of the highest rates that are seen among student populations across countries. So this is something that we need to pay attention to. However, we have not seen increases in their use, which was something that we have been afraid would happen as the regulations change and as there is a decrease in the perception of marijuana as harmful. However, what we have seen is a shift in the pattern of the way that marijuana is consumed. And, for example, we are seeing that up to 40% of those teenagers that abuse marijuana in the past year have abused it as edibles in those states that have medical marijuana legalized, in contrast to 26% on the states that have no medically legalized marijuana. The other area where we have not seen an increase, and we were anticipated, we were afraid that there may be, is heroin. We have seen increases in heroin use among young adults, which has generated a lot of concern, but the rates remain very low, 0.6%, and stable. And finally, we have recording for the first time numbers that are worrying us vis-a-vis the new technology utilization of e-cigarettes with very, very high rates of use among 12 graders, 17% reported past year use. Among the 10 graders, 16% reported past month use. And finally, among the 8th graders, 8%, a little bit over 8% reported past month use. So overall, very, very good news as it relates to most of the legal and illegal drugs, but we need to still be concerned about the very high rates of prevalence of substance abuse among our teenagers.
Dr. Volkov, thank you. Our next speaker will be Mary Lou Leary, who is the Deputy Director for State, Local, and Tribal Affairs at the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Ms. Leary?
Thank you. And thanks to all of you for participating in this call today. Thanks to Dr. Volkov for hosting the call and to Lloyd and to Richard for their research on this really important topic. Each of you plays a vital role in our effort to use science to shape national drug policy. On behalf of the President and Acting Director Botticelli, I want to thank you for your work and for sharing these latest survey results. This year's Monitoring the Future data shows promising signs on the declining rates of adolescent substance abuse. They reinforce the need to continue efforts on prevention, treatment, and recovery. The Obama administration remains steadfast in its commitment to reduce drug use and its consequences. We all know that the best way to reduce drug use is to prevent it from ever starting. The young people represented in today's study are making decisions that will define their future and the future health of the next generation of American leaders, innovators, and citizens. I encourage parents, teachers, coaches, mentors, have a conversation with a young person in your life about making the healthy decisions that will keep them on a path toward a successful future. We all recognize the impact of drug use on America. Too many of us have been touched by a life cut short by overdose or a future cut down by substance dependence. Current opioid usage rates among teens is at one of the lowest rates we've seen in years. This is encouraging news at a time when thousands of people across the country die from opioid overdose every year. And to help prevent the abuse of prescription drugs, we urge Americans to keep track of prescription medications in your home and dispose of any unused or expired medications properly. Prevention is, and it's always been, the best tool we have to reduce drug use among young people. And with that, I'd like to give the floor to Dr. Lloyd Johnston from the University of Michigan. He's the architect of today's study.
Thank you, Ms. Leary, and Dr. Johnston, and then Dr. Miek, both from the University of Michigan, will be commenting.
Good morning, all. Pleased to be joining you for this release of the 40th survey in the Monitoring the Future series. As in most years, we surveyed 42,000 students across the country in some 377 schools. As you've heard, the results are really quite positive this year. I think a couple of the most important being the continuing decline in cigarette smoking, which is at the lowest levels in all three grades we surveyed that we've seen in the history of the study. And the same is true for alcohol. Alcohol, while still at substantial levels, is at historical lows, again, in the history of the study. Still, there are a lot of kids who are using both of these substances and who will pay a price for it, and we worry about them. But progress is real and important. Among the illicit drugs, there have been a number of drugs that are down, including ecstasy, salvia, over-the-counter cold medications that are misused to get high. And as Dr. Volkow said, any prescription drug use is also down, and that's an important development because the prescription drugs became a bigger part of the country's drug problem in the late 90s and early 2000s. When illicit drug began to turn around, illicit drug use, then we continued to see a rise in the use of these psychotherapeutic drugs. And probably the most important among them are the narcotic drugs. And they have declined significantly this year and have been declining since about 2015. So I see those as quite important developments. Of the drugs that didn't show a decline, most of them, including some important ones like heroin and methamphetamine and crack, are at lower levels than they have been. So even in those cases, there has been progress, although not more progress this year. Really, practically none of the drugs showed an increase this year, and I'm sure that's music to the ears of the nation's parents. And the one fly in the ointment I can see is has to do with e-cigarettes, and my colleague Richard Miek is going to be speaking about those.
Thank you, Lloyd. Good morning, all. Thank you for dialing in. I'd like to elaborate a little more on Dr. Volkow and Dr. Johnston's comments about e-cigarettes. This is the first national study to show that among teens, e-cigarettes are now have higher use than regular tobacco cigarettes. We asked 8th, 10th, and 12th graders if they, in the past 30 days, had used an e-cigarette or a tobacco regular cigarette, and we found that among 8th and 10th graders, more than twice as many reported using an e-cigarette than a regular tobacco cigarette. And among 12th graders, we find in the past 30 days, about 17% had reported using an e-cigarette, whereas only 14% had reported using a regular tobacco cigarette. So these results show that e-cigarettes have become the nicotine delivery device of choice among today's teens.
Great. Thank you very much. We're doing great on time. We're going to be opening up the lines in one moment. Before I do so, I just want to have it recognized that supporting documents for this teleconference, including press releases, visuals, and an overview of the findings, can all be found on the NIDA website at drugabuse.gov. That's drugabuse.gov. Simply click on News and Events tab and then select the block specific to MTF to be guided to the page. The page will also have contact information for press offices for each of today's speakers if you wish to set up individual interviews. So with that, we're now going to open up the lines to field any questions that may exist beyond the information that's already been shared. And I will ask the operator to field any questions that may be out there.
Thank you. At this time, we will conduct the question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your first and last name. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. One moment, please.
I believe we have a few questions that are coming in.
Yes. Our first question is from Amara Omokwe. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I was wondering regarding the e-cigarettes, if the use of e-cigarettes among adolescents hasn't necessarily been determined to be a gateway to the use of regular tobacco cigarettes. Can you explain why this is still identified as an area of concern in the survey?
Well, the e-cigarette is a very new way of administering substances. They were developed initially for administration of nicotine. It enables you to vaporize it and to inhale it and deliver into the brain quite rapidly. These e-cigarettes are now being used also to administer other drugs like THC. What we're seeing, and the monitoring the future survey very nicely shows, and other investigators have started to look at this, is that we are having many kids actually that are abusing both the cigarettes and the e-cigarettes, both the regular tobacco and the e-cigarettes, and these tend to be kids that are at greater risk. But it was most worrisome are those kids that are only using e-cigarettes because of the concern that had e-cigarettes not been available, they would never develop addiction to nicotine. And also the concern, which we do not have the data since this has not yet been evaluated, of whether the use of e-cigarettes in those lower-risk kids could then transition into regular cigarette smoking on the one hand. On the other hand, we are also anticipating that these may in turn influence the patterns of other drug use because the research has shown in laboratory animal experiments that exposure to nicotine enhances the rewarding effects of other drugs. So that concern that there is this new route of administration for nicotine that in turn it may serve in a so-called gateway drug is something that we need to be cautious about and evaluate whether it is true or not. But as of now, there is very limited research on this subject.
Thank you, Dr. Volkov. Dr. Mia?
Yeah, just I'll quickly elaborate on that a little bit more. E-cigarettes, in 2011, their prevalence was about 1.1%. They've really taken off ever since then. They've doubled about every single year, and so this is a relatively new phenomenon. And we can't do a randomized controlled trial. We can't give teens e-cigarettes and see if they progress to harder drugs, of course. So the best we can do is follow people who have used e-cigarettes and see what happens to them as they age. And so that's what we're doing now with monitoring the future. And in the coming years, we will have more definitive scientific information about whether e-cigarette use predicts the use of harder drug use in the future.
Excellent. Thank you. And is there another question, operator?
There is. Our next question is from Rob.
I believe it's Rob.
Rob Stein with NPR. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more about, so if we don't know whether e-cigarettes are or not a gateway to other drug use, what is the concern about their use?
Well, nicotine, the concern about their use among young people is that nicotine, we know, is an addictive drug. So the notion that through this delivery system, you're actually going to end up having teenagers that then remain addicted to nicotine, which is highly addictive. Now, the aspect of potentially also e-cigarettes having additionally toxic effect actually was very nicely described on a New York Times article this Sunday in which they were commenting that the lack of manufacturing practices, a lack of standards leads to cigarettes that are leaking toxics and chemicals that when inhaled could have quite adverse effects to the human body. And so that is, again, because these are new devices, we don't have sufficient information yet to actually be able to ascertain their negative extent. But our concern with young people is that independent of these toxic effects that may occur in the technology of the e-cigarette, that nicotine is addictive. And also since this is particularly relevant in adolescents whose brain is actually rapidly changing as they transition from childhood into adulthood, and where we know that the effects of drugs are faster acting and longer lasting consequences.
And if I could just follow up with one question, which is that there's some have argued that maybe kids are not using regular cigarettes because e-cigarettes are available, and so it might be a benefit in that way. It might be helping reduce the use of regular tobacco use among teenagers.
Well, a recent paper just published, actually, I think it's the American Academy of Pediatrics, showed that they were actually evaluating teenagers, 1,000 kids. I think the study was done in Hawaii, where they were looking at the characteristics of kids that were just using electronic cigarettes versus those that were using electronic cigarettes and tobacco. And what they found was that kids at higher risk on the basis of their characteristics were abusing both of them, whereas kids that have low-risk characteristics, as evidenced by strong support, social systems, by good performance at school, by having good social skills, were predominantly using the electronic cigarette. And so these are the kids that probably would have not engaged in consuming nicotine had it not been available by an e-cigarette. So the concern is, of course, that we had done incredible advances in the prevention of nicotine use among teenagers, and that the excess of the e-cigarettes will lead us to lose some of that territory, making kids that otherwise wouldn't have consumed the drug become addicted to it.
Dr. Miek, I think you can comment further on some of the data around e-cigarette use and more conventional tobacco cigarette use.
Yes, just a slight addendum to Dr. Volkow's comments. Among 12th graders, we find that about 4% of all 12th graders use e-cigarettes alone. They've never smoked a regular cigarette in their life. And what's particularly interesting and perhaps troublesome about this group is that these people are more likely to be college-bound than the non-college-bound. And that's unusual for cigarettes these days. And so this kind of builds on Dr. Volkow's point that e-cigarettes seem to be reaching a population that is not being reached by cigarettes.
Great. We have several more calls, I know, in the queue. So, operator, let's go to our next one, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Allison Knopf with Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Weekly. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Dr. Volkow, heroin use is going up among young adults, according to treatment providers in many states and according to the states themselves. Why isn't it going up among high schoolers? When does it start? Or does this survey mean that the trend toward an increase in heroin use is actually reversing?
I would not say that the results from monitoring the future showing no increases in heroin in adolescents can be interpreted to say that the trend of increases in heroin in the United States is reversing. It actually reflects the different age and demographics of those kids that are in their 20s, but actually the highest risk is occurring between 25 and 29 years of age, that initially, apparently, many of them become addicted to opioid medications and then transition into injection of heroin. We are not seeing this pattern among adolescents. And again, this may reflect, among other factors, some of the protective environmental constraints that adolescents may have, that they may not be exposed easily to heroin in as much as an adult that's 20 years old may be. Also, we are seeing definitively the highest prevalence for addiction to opioid medications occurs between 18 and 25 years of age. And so also these teenagers, even though they may be experimenting, their rate of drug use for Vicodin and OxyContin may not be as frequent and as severe as you will see later on in life.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, I think there are several more questions in the queue.
Yes, and as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question is from Nancy Ride with Elements Behavioral Health and Addiction.com. Your line is open.
Hi there. My question has to do with whether the youth surveyed were asked when they were using the e-cigarettes, they contained nicotine juice or not, and whether they were using the e-cigarettes to smoke marijuana. Thank you.
Dr. Miek?
Yeah, this is Richard Miek. this is the first year that we asked about e-cigarettes, so we just included a question asking the youth if they had used an electronic cigarette, parentheses, e-cigarette. And given the results, we've added a lot more questions along the lines that you're talking about that will be asked in 2015 about whether the youth know what it is that they're smoking and whether they're smoking marijuana or nicotine and a host of other potential things that could be in their e-cigarette devices.
Great. Thank you. I believe there's another question.
Yes. Our next question is from Chris Cousins with Bangor Daily News. Your line is open.
Good morning, folks. I'm interested in the results from the survey that have to do with marijuana use in states where medical marijuana is legal. I noted the results you found in relation to edibles, but wondering if you saw any other correlations.
That was really the primary factor that we looked at was how they consume marijuana, and we found that the proportion of youngsters in the medical marijuana states consumed by eating edibles was considerably larger than in the other states. Can't say that I have a quick explanation for that, except maybe it's just easier to be handling marijuana and using it in cooking and so forth in those states because there's less likelihood of being turned in. We haven't done an intensive exploration of the differences between medical marijuana states and the others.
Okay, thank you. Another question, operator?
Yes. Our next question is from Whitney McKnight with Frontline Medical Communications. Your line is open.
Hi. Yeah, following up on the question about cannabinoid use, I'm wondering if you have a concern over the differences between the cannabinoids in edible marijuana versus inhaled marijuana? Well, in particular, on the teenage brain.
Well, this is an area, actually, that, again, is relatively new for us because until very recently, most of the prevalence of the consumption of marijuana by teenagers was by smoking. And as a result of that, we actually have very little information regarding, for example, the bioavailability, which means if you do consume it by the oral route, how much of it will end up in your blood. And what are the temporal, the kinetics of that behavior? And again, when you smoke a drug, the drug gets into the brain very rapidly, and that is associated with stronger rewarding effects and more addictiveness. But it also is associated with a better control of how much you ingest. When you are taking oral marijuana, the problem is it may take 60 minutes to get actually absorbed and peak concentrations. So in the meantime, you may not feel much, and that may lead you to take higher content. And this has started to emerge as a problem because people buying edibles don't really know how much they are consuming, and this results in very untoward effects and ending up in the emergency room. So one of the priorities right now identified at NIDA is the need to develop research that can inform us in terms of, number one, the bioavailability, as well as the pharmacokinetics of marijuana, THC, and the other components that are in marijuana when these products are consumed by these various routes. But right now, unfortunately, we do not have that data.
Okay, thank you.
I could just add, I think that it's pretty obvious when people are smoking a joint, the rough quantity that they're getting, and the feedback, as Dr. Volkow says, is rather quick, you know, whether you know how high you're getting. Whereas what's in any edible, say a sheet of brownies, you have no idea the quantity of marijuana that's been put in there, and the time to get feedback as to how much you've consumed, as she says, is an hour. So it's quite a different situation, and I think considerably more dangerous.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Operator, are there any more questions at this time?
There are no other questions at this time.
Okay. Before we begin to wrap up, I'd like to invite our speakers from NIDA, University of Michigan, or the Office of National Drug Control Policy for any final additional comments that they'd like to share with the with our listeners.
I do want to highlight the point made by the Office of National Drug Control Policy that our best strategy for controlling the problem of drugs in our country is prevention. And prevention, since the age at which you are at greater risk for experimentation is adolescence, prevention efforts need to focus on this age as well as children. The indicators are very good, and I think that in a way it does reflect the fact that prevention strategies that have been implemented in the United States are working. However, at the same time, I think that I want to highlight that we cannot become complacent because the rate of drug utilization among adolescents in the United States are among the highest in the world. So we still have a lot to do in terms of prevention of drug use in our country.
Thank you, Dr. Buckle. Dr. Johnston?
Yes, if I could add to that, when we look over the longer-term history of the 40 years that we've covered adolescent drug abuse in the U.S., we see there are wide fluctuations over time. And one of the most serious was what I call a relapse of the 90s. And I think that came about because the country took its eye off this problem. We like to leave problems behind. And the adolescent drug abuse problem, I think, was one that we wanted to leave behind. And everyone from the Congress to parents were paying less attention to the issue of drugs. And while that was happening, a new generation of young people were entering adolescence, and they knew less about why they shouldn't use these drugs. They weren't deterred from use, and it's what we call generational forgetting of the hazards that comes with generational replacement. So this is not a problem we can turn away from. It's one that requires continuing effort, and especially maybe in times like this where things seem to be getting better.
Thank you very much. Any other additional comments before we formally conclude?
Mary, I would agree that this data from Monitoring the Future shows that prevention works, and this is not the time to become complacent. This is the time to redouble the prevention efforts, and particularly with parents and others who have influence on young people.
Thank you, Ms. Lyric. Well, with that, before we do officially conclude, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Johnston's work on this survey. As he had been introduced, he is the architect of Monitoring the Future and has been with the study for 40 years, and we want to thank him and congratulate him for an incredible 40 years of very valuable data and understanding the trends in youth and how we can better inform policy and practice. So thank you for that, Dr. Johnston.
Thank you very much.
With that, we are concluding this press event. As I noted, on drugabuse.gov, our website, you can find all the information related to MTF, Monitoring the Future Study, and we thank you for your time today. Operator, we can officially conclude.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Participants, you may disconnect at this time.